From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour goes back to April 28, 2003. Monroe County's clerk made it official. She was running for county executive. The Republican announced a platform based on low and stable taxes and efficient county spending. She ran against Bill Johnson, the mayor of Rochester, and that November, Maggie Brooks won big. Since 2004 in January, she has held the office of Monroe County Executive. After a rough campaign against Bill Johnson, they publicly reconciled, and now more than 10 years later, Brooks is working with Mayor Number 4, Democrat Lovely Warren. But other Democrats say they don't think she works with their party nearly enough. Brooks' supporters say she's been a diligent steward of tax dollars. This hour, we'll talk about all of that and a lot more. And we welcome Maggie Brooks to Connections. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Congratulations on your new gig.
It's still relatively new. Yeah, thank you very much. Can you believe it's been four mayors for you since you started?
No, it's really funny. I guess it's five if you count Carlos. Carbolata, maybe not. No, maybe.
Yeah,
it's
I even forgot about that.
I know.
I know that, especially in the later stages of the campaign, you supported Lovely Warren, and it looks like you guys are off on a good foot.
We are. I think, despite what some people perceive, the city and the county work very well together at the staff level. We've had a lot of momentum under every mayor, and I don't want to lose that. And so the fact that I had an opportunity to say to her very publicly, I support you, I endorse your candidacy, let's work together, let's get some things done. What makes it kind of liberating for me is that I'm term limited. I have a year and a half left on my third term and can't run again. So it's a real opportunity for us to come together and kind of push the politics to the side and say, are there some projects and priorities that we both can wrap our arms around and work on. And I think we'll get there.
And you did, well, it looks to me like you did with Citygate and Costco right out of the gate, though I don't know how involved Lovely Warren was on that, but it looks to me like that was a pretty good example of what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And she was very important in moving that project forward. As a matter of fact, I credit her with helping us find the vote that we needed, the votes that we needed on the minority side of the county legislative aisle. It would not have happened, I don't think, if she had not intervened. And so I thank her for that because it's an important project. I think sometimes things get caught up in politics, and there were a lot of other issues that fed into the holding up of the capital improvement program. But at the end of the day, those projects mean jobs and quality of life, and we all have to come together. And even when there aren't enough dollars to go around, we have to be able to invest in critical infrastructure and critical projects like Costco.
And it feels like a little bit of deja vu. The mayor is talking about a performing arts center downtown. We've seen some problems with what Arnold Rothschild and others wanted out at Medley Center. And so we're right back there again. What do you think about a performing arts center downtown, especially with the mayor pushing for it?
Well, I've been a supporter of a performing arts center since I took office. It was probably, to me, the most important piece of Renaissance Square that I would have liked to have seen accomplished. And I do believe that arts and culture is going to be an engine for our center city. And we have Broadway Theater there now at the auditorium. That's not going to last forever because the theater is antiquated, outdated. RBTL has not been shy about saying they need a new theater for the future. I think it starts a good conversation, and we'll see where it goes. But I'm certainly supportive of a performing arts center in this community.
Some taxpayers may be leery about an investment. What can the county and what can taxpayers take when it comes to an investment in a project like that?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, I think in general, people look at public-private partnerships and they say, you know, they look at what happened with the Fast Ferry and they may look at Renaissance Square up and down and they may say, I am leery of any public-private partnership, especially on a performing arts center or a large-scale project. What would you say to them?
I think I've been very vocal about the fact that public-private partnerships are going to be the survival of communities and municipal government. We can't do it alone anymore. Government can't fund massive projects to the extent that we did maybe 10, 20 years ago. There's no money in Albany. There's no money in Washington. So we really do have to engage the private sector, come together and work with those developers. And unfortunately, usually the public money is the first money in. But I think we've seen examples where that commitment has paid dividends. Midtown is a great example. We're seeing some private investment there now and some momentum. You look at a number of the housing projects. You know, our IDA gets beaten up all the time for incentives and what some people call corporate welfare. But at the end of the day, we truly are leveling the playing field. And I think in a state where it's still pretty hard to do business in a lot of ways, we have to work with companies, because if we don't think they will go elsewhere, we're kidding ourselves. Pennsylvania, on a daily basis, is trying to lure our companies and lure our projects across the border. So I think, you know, there's a reality check. We have to be able to work with the private sector. We have to be able to invest public money, private money, or we will not get, we'll be status quo. We'll be at a standstill.
We talked about Lovely Warren, and she has talked about on this program about the challenges she faces. She said it's difficult, especially for a woman in the mayor's office. Are women in politics treated differently than men?
You know, I don't want to say that we are treated differently. It's just, I guess, if I was truthful, I would say yes, we are treated differently. But I don't mean that to say that it's not a respectful treatment. It's not a treatment that allows us to get things done. I think sometimes people are more comfortable with a male leadership figure, and women are now making their way into, you know, the boardrooms of corporate Rochester, into government. Look, we have three countywide elected females right now. I keep telling our sheriff, watch out. You know, we have the first female elected in the city of Rochester. So women are here to stay. I think it's interesting. I could tell you, you know, I could probably write a book if I needed to on some of the things, people coming into my office, and my deputy is a male, and having meetings where the whole time the people are in my office, they're talking to the male deputy county executive, and it's like, hey, I'm going to make the decision here, and I'm going to spend the money. So it's just it's a little bit of a difference. But I think you know, women and men have to get past that gender focus and just say, look, we have a mayor now who's committed to a number of different projects that help our quality of life. So, man or woman, we need to kind of stand with her.
There's going to be certain things that you can say about the recent LDC stuff, and there's certain things that you can't. So let's try to sort through some of that. At some point soon, we're going to see progress on the LDC investigations and the prosecutions. There's some, certainly, again, you'll decide what you can talk about. But first of all, the county is spending, looks like, tens of thousands of dollars to have Dennis Vacca review the LDCs. And we already have the FBI investigating. We have the state, the AG's office. Why do you need to conduct your own review with that kind of expense to taxpayers?
Well, you know what? It's not really a review that we did. Essentially, we brought Dennis Vacca into Monroe County to help us respond to the mountains of information that was being requested by the Attorney General's office. I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of documents that we had to provide to them. I would have had to hire three staff people and put them on that project full time. It was very apparent to us that we always said we wanted to cooperate with them. And to do that, we needed to somehow have the manpower and the ability to communicate with them and to respond in a professional way. You know, people talk about the money that we're spending on Dennis Vacca. I would just turn it around a little bit and say that this Attorney General's office has spent millions of dollars investigating Monroe County, and not just Monroe County, other governments across the state. I get that. That's his job. But when people criticize us for actually defending ourselves, and that's essentially what Dennis Vacca is helping us do, defend ourselves, we should be mindful that the tax dollars in your other pocket are going to the state attorney general's office to carry out all of these investigations.
We're going to talk about that, because in many ways the AG's office has had some serious missteps, and we're going to talk about that in a moment too. The legislature Democrats leader Kerry Andrews said the county executive shouldn't be investigating herself. And again, you're saying it's not an investigation. It's more of a trying to coordinate a response. But she's saying, let the legislature do this, because that way you're not involved and people won't have any doubt about the way things are going on. Why not?
Well, you know, the investigation is not our investigation. This is an attorney general's office investigation. I would suggest that Kerry Andrews talk to our attorney general if she's interested in being a part of that investigation. You know, it's been turned around that the county is investigating. We are certainly not. And to the extent that Dennis Vacca was helping us with our response, I'm not involved in that in any way. We purposely brought Dennis in so that we wouldn't have to be policing ourselves, if you will, even though it's not a true investigation. We're just responding to what is being asked of us by the attorney general's office. And if the legislature Kerry Andrews or any other would like to get involved, they really need to direct that interest and those questions and make that request of the lead agency.
But you helped create at least a couple of the LDCs we're talking about here. And you've got Dennis Vacco coming in to help review or look at what happened. But shouldn't you already know what happened?
I do know what happened. I know that in the case of UTC, we put together a public-private partnership that includes a lot of companies. I think there's 14 companies that work on UTC. And it was a project that was put together to help the county comply with the ever-changing, fast-paced changing technology that we all have to deal with. When I took office in 2004, the county was still using computers from the early 1980s, the first computers. Our technology was way behind the times. And when you want to talk about productivity and efficiency in government, we have to apply technology. We can't afford to do what we need to do to bring ourselves to a state-of-the-art status in county government. That's why we worked with these private companies and set up UTC. And I think it has been a success. M3S is all about public safety. Again, when I took office, we had a 20-year strategic plan to upgrade infrastructure for first responders in the community. We, by the way, the county, that is one of our unique collaborations here in Monroe County is that we pay for all of the public safety infrastructure, communications infrastructure for our agencies locally. We are happy to do that. But we had this plan and no money to pay for it. And so we said, what do we do? The UTC model was working. And, you know, if you go through the numbers and people on the Democratic side of the aisle have, it's working. And in terms of M3S, my focus has been, number one, are we getting what we've paid for? And the answer, as far as I can tell, is yes. And number two, are we working with all of those that are involved in the project to make sure that the needs of our first responders, fire, EMS, police, are being met? You saw the article the other day that some of the fire people are concerned about the radios, and they called it issues. There really are no issues because there's no project yet. We're developing the project, and we've made a commitment to them that we're not going to go forward with a project that doesn't meet their needs. So it's a work in progress, and I will tell you, if you go around the country, you will find other counties doing what we are doing with M3S and UTC. I presented M3S as a best practice to the White House. When they were looking for public safety initiatives and how they could pay for some public homeland security initiatives. And so, from where I sit, I have one responsibility. That's to the taxpayers, and they are getting what they paid for, and the product is going to be meet the needs of our first responder community.
All right, let me try to get specific. You said you acknowledged there was a problem with the Navitec management of the contracts, and so you plan to fix it by canceling the contract with Navitec, moving the LDC projects to a different place. What was the nature of the problem or the irregularities with Navitec?
I think you go back to the Attorney General's audit. These were not our problems. This, again, was the Attorney General's audit where they raised some questions. A lot of what you're referring to is going to play out in court.
Yeah.
And that's not my
piece
of it.
Didn't Dennis Vacco said the same thing at the news conference, though, that you found irregularities?
He did not. The Attorney General did. And what Dennis was saying is we looked at the same information, and there is the perception that there are some irregularities. That's what Dennis said. If you go back and listen to him, he didn't say, Monroe County investigated and found irregularities. He was saying, okay, looking at the same documents that the Attorney General's office is looking at, we agree that there could be the perception of irregularities. And so
but can you explain why that is?
I think, that's going to be carried out in court. I mean, those are the things that are going to be the focus of a court investigation. And again, as county executive, that happens in the Hall of Justice. That has nothing to do with me. What I have to do is make sure that we protect the integrity of this project, the integrity and the merits of the project, which are there and are very real. And so my focus has been on that side of the equation. And it is a project with merits. It's hard to explain. I've noticed, court stuff is easy. Court stuff is easy. It's a soundbite, and everybody can simplify that, and they understand that. Very hard to explain a project that involves a monitoring and reaction center, new radios, new pagers, new towers. I mean, it's a very complex project. And at some point, when we do the launch, we are going to have to invite the media in so that they can see exactly what it is we've been working on for all this time.
So when Dennis Vacco is talking about the irregularities, he's referring to what the AGs have found. This is where I think people will get hung up a little bit, though. This is something that you have helped steward, and if we're looking at Navitech and there were problems at all with the way either contracts are awarded or money, especially taxpayers' dollars, don't you want to know and be involved? I mean, don't you? You say that doesn't have anything to do with you, but shouldn't have
well,
something to do with it.
Well, it certainly has something to do with the county, and that's why we have been cooperating with the Attorney General's office. That's why we brought Dennis Vacco in to make sure that we are cooperating, giving them all the information that they need to complete their investigation. That's my role in it, to work with the Attorney General's office on what started as a municipal audit and certainly developed into something more. We continue to cooperate. This is an ongoing investigation, and people get frustrated because we're not, you know, standing on street corners talking about this. But the reality is this is still an ongoing investigation.
Do you think they've done anything wrong?
Compromise.
Do you think Navitech's done anything wrong?
I'm not in a position to say that. I'm really not. I don't have access to all the evidence, so I can't really say that. It's an ongoing investigation.
When they got the contract, I think it was like $100 million, and they were a pretty young company. I mean, things sort of spun off, and they were very new. And when the county says, okay, what did you do to make sure that this is the right company that gets this contract?
Well, these were the same. It was the same individuals who were working on UTC. So they had a proven track record with a county. They had been part of a successful project, and I do think UTC has been successful.
So you had a comfort level with that.
I did, and they came from Siemens, which is a very well-known company.
Now, speaking more broadly, you launched your campaign for county executive in 2003 as a fiscal conservative. You talked about stable property taxes, efficient spending, things that ring so true with people, especially upstate voters. And you've always been steadfast in saying we've got to be good stewards of tax dollars, support the free market. But when you use the word complicated, or this is not LDC, this investigation, it's a little more dense or complicated than looking at court and sound bites. And it's difficult for our listeners. It's difficult for people in the media to really sort through and wade this out. And maybe that's part of the issue with LDCs. You have a quasi-governmental agency or a nonprofit private company. And instead of just saying we have a service that needs, you talk about radios for police, fire, et cetera, and we're going to bid it out to the free market and the best bid we get, we're going to give it to. The government creates this quasi-governmental agency, and then all of a sudden things get very dense. And yes, there are advantages for LDCs. Maybe they can do things a little cheaper, a little better. But it feels a lot to taxpayers like a way to reward people or companies or contracts because it's hard to track this stuff. Should we just dispense with LDCs altogether?
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I think public-private partnerships, and that's what an LDC is. It's a public-private partnership. And by the way, there's over 700 of them in New York State.
It's certainly not unique here.
So it's not unique to Monroe County. I guess the calculation that the public needs to make is, are you going to demand that your government, city, town, village, county, whatever, are you going to continue to demand that we are innovative, that we are creative, that we think out of the box so that we can do some things that we've never done before? If the answer is yes, then there's some risk involved. You know, you're always going to be using structures that may be untested. The LDC model has been tested in this state. And, you know, you can argue good or bad, but I think, you know, there are examples of good, examples of bad. But I think, you know, the reality is we don't have the money that we used to have in government to do the things that we need to do. And we need to work with the private sector. We have a procurement policy that protects all the concerns that you just mentioned. When look at just one of the companies that's working in M3S, Harris. Harris is a national leader in exactly what we're doing here with public safety infrastructure. I mean, they're a national leader. There are whole states that have used this model using Harris. So, you know, I think it's very simple to say LDC bad, and we ought to change it. It's hard to explain it, and so people don't necessarily understand it. Radio, television, you know, you don't have a half of a front page in the newspaper to kind of explain all the details here. But, you know, it's a new way of doing business, and if people want us to go back to status quo, that's kind of what they're saying when they say, should we just do away with these models?
I think that's probably right. They may say it might be more expensive, but at least we'll understand it better. Or that's the challenge, is saying, if it's more expensive, is it a better system? Because at least we can feel like our tax dollars are protected.
Yeah, and most governments would then say, it's more expensive, we're not going to do it. And, you know, that's when you get into all of the public safety issues. Why do we choose public safety? Why are we choosing technology? Because we learned a lot during 9/11. We learned a lot with a lot of the Homeland Security initiatives going on around the country. So we learned that we needed to do some things. And by the way, M3S was created to comply with numerous federal mandates that were the result of 9/11 that we would not have been able to pay for. And you're right, it's the tension between people saying, I don't want you to raise my taxes, Maggie, don't do that. And I want to get more for my dollar, the dollar that I do pay. Well, you have to do something. And I have to, you know, I said this to somebody the other day, and I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they created the 911 center, because nobody had ever gone there before. We were the first to have that truly consolidated 911 center. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall, because I guarantee you some of the same conversations are taking place. The difference is, these days, you know, the favorite political opposition weapon of mass destruction is the Attorney General's office. They don't call me and complain anymore. They pick up the red phone and call Eric Schneiderman. So that's the new paradigm of government. We don't understand it, so we're going to investigate it. And I think we're going to miss some opportunities. Obviously,
is this all political, this LDC stuff?
You know, I think there's a component of politics. I'm not going to say 100% political, but there's absolutely a component of politics in this.
If Navitec is found to have mismanaged our money or been awarded contracts, you know, inappropriately, et cetera, and there's still a lot to play out. But if that is the finding, who's responsible? Does it come back to you, and do you say, we made a mistake?
I think what we're trying to do is let the courts deal with all of the issues that they think are problematic, and those will be defined in a court of law. So let them deal with that. My concern is that we protect the integrity of this project, which has huge benefits for the taxpayers and for our first responders, and that we move forward with this project so that our taxpayers are getting a good return on their dollar. And I think they are.
The charges against your husband are almost certainly going to be dropped. That was a really poorly mismanaged situation from the AG's office. He didn't even get to testify in front of a grand jury. And frankly, I think there was a lot of discussion in the media. And if our listeners aren't aware, the media was tipped off 24 hours in advance before an arrest, which almost never happens. I mean, there were some serious, serious questions. And frankly, it was a unique situation for all of us. So I think the charges against Bob Wiesner are going to be dropped. Now the AG's office is saying they want a do-over. They'll let him testify in front of a grand jury. Drop the charges. Let's redo it. Should they have a do-over?
Respectfully, I think I've been very clear. That's really a personal issue for me, and he has a lawyer, and certainly his lawyer can speak on
sure.
his behalf.
And I think you've been clear about that. Do you feel like at least it's still important to say I stand by him, or are you going to let this play out?
Well, he's my husband.
Very good. Let's go apart from the LDC investigation. Let me ask you a question about how jobs are determined. Now, your husband's a retired police captain, very well regarded in that community. He's had some jobs that have caused some criticism. Director of Security for the Monroe County Water Authority. Critics have said, hey, that's the county executive husband getting a prime position. It's a lot of money. You've always said that people get their jobs on their merits. They don't get their jobs based on who they know, who they're married to, et cetera. Now we've got Mayor Lovely Warren. Her uncle is hired to provide security in a brand new job. And Reggie's a guy who, frankly, if you talk to anybody in Albany, they know him. He's driven governors around. In fact, I heard from a Democrat who said, I didn't even realize that Reggie was Lovely's uncle.
Right.
I had no
right.
idea. He's obviously qualified. So you've got people getting jobs that are close to government, they're high paying, and they're qualifications aside, you've got the public saying, I'm not comfortable with this because it feels like you're handing out prime spots to people to benefit those close to you, whether they're qualified or not. Are we at the point where elected leaders need to say, I'm not going to do that anymore, just to make sure taxpayers know that's not what this is about?
Well, this is one of the things that doesn't get talked about a lot. The jobs you mentioned all require a waiver. The state of New York is actually the authority to give an individual a job. If you go out to our public safety training facility, we've got a lot of talented retired police officers, a lot of law enforcement experience. They were all required to get a waiver from the state of New York. And what is a waiver? It means you can't collect two pensions. You can work and you can collect a paycheck, but you can't collect a second pension. The governor has been very clear, and I think we've seen this in the past couple of years, that he's not going to be as generous with waivers as previous administrations in Albany. And I think we're seeing that. I look at it two ways. You know what? You do miss out on a lot of talent because law enforcement, most people in law enforcement retire when they're 50 years old. They're not ready to, you know, go have an umbrella drink on a beach in Florida. You know, they still want to work and they still have 10 or 15 good years left. And so to be able to capture some of that expertise, I think, is important. And you see that throughout our community, our public safety training facility, a lot of the colleges locally will hire retired police officers for security directors. And so it's really, again, you know, the public has to say, is the perception of I'll answer it a different way. This is a very small community. It really is a very small community. And there's only so many places a retired police officer is going to be able to work or whatever, you know. And people will say you shouldn't have family members working in different places. If we want our kids to stay here, my daughters are in New York City. If we want our kids to stay here, they got to work somewhere. I've had people say to me, no one in your family should have a job in Monroe County. Okay. I mean, what have they done except be, you know, related to me in some fashion? So I think we can take it to an extreme. But the waiver process is really what dictates the hiring of a former state trooper, a former Rochester police captain, you know, a former law enforcement at any level. And until the state adjusts that waiver, those people are actually playing by the rules. And I think you'll see some changes because there's been some movement in that direction.
We're talking to County Executive Maggie Brooks. She's term limited, so she's going to be in the unfamiliar position a year from now of not running for County Executive. And what we're going to do is take the shortest break in radio and come back and find out Joe Robach, Mark Cassini, Anthony Danielli, Tony LaFountain, who's likely to be there. She's going to break news and tell us. Maybe probably not, but let's talk about what's coming next for the county and many other issues on Connections. You're listening to member-supported public radio. Stay with us.
WXXI is proud to offer significant value to the organizations that support our programs and services. From nonprofit groups to local businesses, organizations large and small turn to WXXI Public Broadcasting to connect with desirable audiences, demonstrate corporate social responsibility, and generate community goodwill. To learn more about underwriting and sponsorship opportunities on WXXI radio and television, please email underwriting@wxxi.org.
Welcome back to Connections on this Wednesday afternoon. County Executive Maggie Brooks is here. And just as I thought, she's not going to break any news on who's likely to follow her. But there's a lot of names out there. State Senator Joe Robach, Mark Cassini, Anthony Danielli, Tony LaFountain. I know you know a lot of names, and I'm probably not even covering the list. What do you expect in 2015?
Well, I think I expect an opportunity for this party to hand off my position to the next generation of Republican leadership. You know, I've been in office 12 years as county executive, the first time a county exec has done 12 years. I say this all the time, but it's really true. These jobs have a shelf life. I don't believe in term limits because I think voters are smart enough to figure that out on their own. But I do think that there comes a point where every decision you make somebody unhappy. And, you know, people are looking for just a change. And so all the names you mentioned are viable possibilities for our party. We've got, you look at someone like Anthony Danielli, Mark Cassini, they, to me, represent the next generation. I think you're going to see some of that on the other side of the aisle as well. They've got some young people waiting in the wings, some young professional people who would do a very good job. Well, you know, it's going to be up to the voters to decide. We've been in control in the county for 20 years now, mm-hmm. long time. So voters are going to have to decide, you know, do we like stable taxes? Do we like the emphasis on jobs? Do we like what they've been doing to be smaller, smarter, more efficient? Is there a better way? Should we give the other team a chance? And it's changed a lot. The demographics, the political demographics are different than they were when I ran. We are really a Democratic county in a lot of ways. And so I think some of that new dynamic will play into next year's messaging. My job is to just you know, be the best county executive I can be for the next year and a half, so that people will have a favorable opinion of our Republican team.
I've heard some Democrats even say some nice things about a Republican. Anthony Danielli, they say some nice things about him. They say, he is a young rising leader in the local Republican Party. But even Anthony Danielli hasn't had a perfectly smooth path. He was the majority leader of the legislature. And the same Democrats who say nice things about Anthony Danielli say to me, he got kneecapped last year. They say Monroe Community Hospital debate came up, and Anthony had the temerity to actually entertain Democratic ideas. All of a sudden, he's out of the leadership position. He says it's because he wants to spend more time on the family business. Did the Republican Party force him out of his leadership position?
No, I don't think we did at all. That truly was a decision that Anthony made with the support of our party and the support of our leadership team on the legislature and certainly the support of the administration. And sometimes you do have to step back. That's a very time-consuming job. Sometimes not a pleasant job because you can't, you know, you have to herd the cats and you can't make everybody happy. I think Anthony did a great job as majority leader, but I do believe he wanted to spend more time on his business, and I've seen that. I've seen him dedicating a lot more time to his business, but I think, you know what, at some point he may step out of the box and say, what's next for me politically?
He could be a candidate next year.
He could be. So I think all the names you mentioned are names that are going to be at the forefront, you know, and we'll see. And Mark Cassini may beat Louise Slaughter this year.
Is there a moratorium on working with Democrats on the county level from the Republican Party? Is there sort of a, hey, we don't work with them, we don't caucus with them, leave them alone?
You know, I think that's it's what they like to portray, but I don't see that. You know what? If you look at everything we pass at every county legislature, 99% of what we pass is unanimous, absolutely unanimous. And the other 1% is what we fight about. We're never going to agree 100% of the time. But I would tell you that there is a lot of outreach from one side of the aisle to the other. There have been some pretty important conversations on things we can do to work together. And you know, everybody wants to create that perception to their advantage. You know, those evil Republicans, they won't work with us. But I don't see that. And if you look, for example, the dynamic between the county and the city, that's absolutely not the case.
Well, certainly true. I mean, I remember your hug with Bill Johnson, and from the beginning there, that was a relationship that, you know, I think surprised a lot of people. You mentioned, by the way, at the beginning of the hour, you mentioned Comita, and yeah, the Democrat and Chronicles reported on Comita, and they've their opinion pages have taken some shots. Rob on our Facebook page asks, how much influence does the county executive have in picking out who's on the Comita board?
They are my appointments. And actually, are they my appointments? They're not my appointments. They're recommended to the chair of the IDA board.
Okay.
So we do recommend. There have been several on there that I did not recommend.
You want to out them publicly?
No.
Okay.
No, that's okay. Not fair.
the Democrat
because Chronicle, they're all good people.
The Democrat and Chronicle report on Comita, and they pointed out the agency essentially never votes no on a project. But Judy Siles said, look, it's not exactly true because she vets projects beforehand, and anything that really gets to the board for a vote has been vetted. The other side of that is, if the public doesn't know how the projects are being vetted, again, these are our tax dollars. Should that process change? And I know Judy, and I've talked to Judy, and look, she's old school. I don't like having to use a cell phone every day or computers, et cetera. But should there at least be an expectation that that process is going to be much better recorded so the public can see it?
There are open meetings. The IDA meetings are all open meetings. There's a public forum there. There is a public hearing on any project that has a pilot.
So you're saying no?
No, I'm not saying no. I'm just saying that, you know, you have to understand that companies pay to apply for benefits. And I do respect Judy's position that why would we ask a company to pay when we know they aren't going to qualify? There are certain requirements that the state has in place that companies have to meet to be able to qualify for the IDA benefits. Those are state requirements. If they don't meet those requirements and you can look at the information that they submit and you know they don't, why would you ask them to pay $350 only so that people can watch us vote no or watch them vote no?
Yeah, I understand that. But if it's my tax dollars going to some of these companies, shouldn't I know how the vetting process is working before we even get to that point?
I think there is a vetting process.
I can't see it.
Well, I think if you took, not you specifically, yeah, but if generally. Somebody is very interested, they can come to any meeting and they can ask, how was this vetted? Mm-hmm. You can look at the applications. You can see what were the criteria. It's really the same formula applies to every project that is reviewed. There has to be a cost-benefit ratio. There has to be a job creation requirement. And if in the case of a pilot, you have to get the buy-in of the municipality and a school district if it's involved. And so, you know, there is a thorough vetting process, and you can witness that and watch it and ask questions about it at the meetings. That's why we have public meetings.
Yeah. Dr. Ken Graham from Rush Henrietta Schools was very public when the Comita analysis of Marketplace Mall came up, and he said these projects are putting way too much risk on the taxpayers and not enough risk on the companies. Last night we see Hart's Grocer, a grocer downtown, getting help, and a lot of people are excited about a grocery store downtown, but a lot of taxpayers may say, why do my tax dollars need to support a grocery store?
Well, I don't know what benefits were used to help Hart's, so I don't want to talk about that specifically. But, you know, I hear school districts complaining about the pilots and the IDAs. They get money from that. That's money that they wouldn't be getting otherwise. So Medley Center is a great example of that. The school district gets a lot of money from that pilot, more than the other parties involved. And so, it's almost hard for me to accept the criticism that we're putting, you know, too much pressure on taxpayers with these projects. Either you want quality of life or you don't. And these are the things that you have to do sometimes in New York State to achieve quality of life. You want to attract Field and Stream. We don't have a Field and Stream here. Every state in this country is going after Field and Stream. And I was at a presentation, and Matt Hurlbut from GRE was doing a presentation, and he said nationwide there are 1,100 possible deals that can be in any part of the country. 1,100. There are all of our states and all of our communities competing for 1,100 opportunities. Those are bigger companies. And so, you know, competition is fierce, and we have to level the playing field. I wish we didn't have incentives, because I agree. You know, if we didn't have to use them, we wouldn't. But I ask people, what do you want your community to look like?
And I didn't take your comment to defend Medley Center, because that project's had a mess. I understand the point you're making, but surely that's not a good deal for taxpayers.
Well, you know, it's had some challenges, and we're working through that. And I think, you know, the IDA is working with the town and the school district. But I think it is disingenuous for the school district to say this is a bad deal for the school district, because they are getting money. Now, if they want to blow up Medley Center, that's a decision that all parties are going to have to make. The city school district or the East Irondequoit school district will lose that money. So I'm not defending the project, and I'm not judging anybody who's involved in it. I'm just saying that sometimes you have to step out of the box and step off the sidelines to do something of that magnitude. It may not work out at the end of the day.
Are you worried about county golf courses? And I ask because I'm a golfer. And I've got a friend of mine who's been a longtime photographer at Channel 13, where I used to work. Mark is addicted to golf. And he said last year he didn't even want to play at the county courses because they were in such bad shape. You essentially outsourced the management, I think, for the last 20 years or so to Jack Tyndale's group. And something has gone wrong there. Is this a case of bad outsourcing?
No, I don't think it's bad outsourcing. I think it might be unrealistic expectations on the part of the company. When we started, there was a lot less pressure. I agree that when we decided to do the outsourcing move, it was a good move for county government. We shouldn't be in the golf course business. That's one of those areas that it's just, you know, that's not our core mission. And it was a much simpler time when that was awarded. And if you look at some of the challenges we've had with drainage and other environmental issues, that has been very challenging for the Tyndale Group. Jack's Place was brought on, and Tyndale had to assume the management of that. And I don't think that was as successful as people had hoped for. So, you know, there are going to be people who are going to present this in a very confrontational light now. But I think the goal is to go out and see if there's any entity that can come in here and provide a different model that will allow those golf courses to succeed.
Can you just sell them? Can you sell them?
We could sell them. We could sell them collectively. We could sell them independently. But there's a process, and we're involved in that process right now. And I don't know what it will look like at the end of the day. But, you know, you look at Durand. It's, you know, a beautiful course. It was in its day.
Absolutely.
But we have huge drainage issues and huge environmental issues there. And nothing dangerous, but, you know, it impacts the quality of the course. And so we are working through that now with the Tyndales and with others. And we will establish a process, I think, to go out and reprocure and see what we come up with. And, you know, I would not like to see the county take it back over because we have to hire staff. We have to hire, you know, we have to buy equipment. It becomes a very costly proposal. And again, we're not in the golf course business.
We're going to get to the phones in a second. I want to ask you what about something that I think is going to be part of what the legacy of the last 10 years is, which is the tax rate hasn't moved. And you talked about that when you ran for election. It's 8.99. In fact, I think, what was it, 9.10. So it's actually gone down.
Yes.
The actual base rate. But I talked to a friend in Greece and a friend in Pittsburgh, and when they share their tax bills with me, you know, it's $8.99 per thousand. So if you have a $100,000 house, you're paying $899. But now you've got county services itemized out. You've got snow removal, MCC chargeback. So if I live in Greece, it's another $1.13 per thousand. So it's really, to me, feels like, or $1.14. So it feels like I'm paying $10.13 instead of $8.99, which would be the highest it's been since 1992. And I wonder if, why are we taking those items out? Why don't they just roll into the tax rate?
Well, because some of those items, we felt it was a fairer way to distribute the costs, to do it by town. And so that was the decision.
Every town pays a little differently.
Right. Yeah. Every town pays a little differently. You know, I think at the end of the day, what people have to remember is that the county portion of your tax bill is still only 20%. You know, there's a lot of other things that add to the burden of what you are paying. We wanted to make a case to break out Medicaid because you remember when counties were fighting to get the state to do something about Medicaid. And we thought, and we weren't alone, a lot of counties decided, you know what, we're going to break it out so that people know exactly how much of their money is going to Medicaid. You know, MCC, when we put that below the line, we felt that was a more equitable way to pay for those services. It's not, you know, we don't like to do that, but sometimes you have to. And again, it comes down to how do I pay for everything I have to pay for with 17% of my money? 83% is controlled by the state and federal government.
I feel like it was 10 years ago where we talked about mandates and how little control of the actual budget that the county can have. And so that makes me feel like, look, this has been your platform for more than a decade. And if an actualized tax rate is more like 10-13, if you can't really keep it at 8.99, how can anybody? I feel like because of the mandates, it's maybe that's a fair question.
There are counties that have raised their tax rate 30%. I mean, counties are struggling. And, you know, I supported the property tax cap, which caps the amount we can take from the levy. But when you look at a place like Monroe County, where we made a commitment to a flat rate, we are now limited in what we can pull from the levy. It makes it very, very hard to pay for all the things that people expect us to pay for. And here's what people forget about Monroe County. We also share our sales tax. We give away more of our sales tax than we keep. No other county does that. And so, you know, and we have no ability to adjust it because that sharing formula is spelled out in state law. So, you know, in a way, we've kind of handcuffed ourselves by being generous in our community, sharing our resources. And if we truly want to provide tax relief, it's not going to be a property tax cap. It's not going to be even keeping the rate stable. It's going to be going after mandates.
Yeah, you've been saying that for years.
Yeah,
and that's been a challenge for years. Is it fair to say if I live in the town of Greece, my tax rate's really more like 10-13 than 8.99?
I don't know because I've never seen a Greece tax bill. I live in Webster.
Let's get to TJ in Rochester. TJ, you're on with Maggie Brooks. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry I just picked up the call. back in about this time, back in 2009, there was an announcement made by Maggie Brooks about a deal made with Frontier to provide internet service for inner city people. Mayor Bill Johnson proposed this initiative and followed through with Bob Duffy that in order to close the digital divide, they proposed to offer service, free internet service, to the city of Rochester. Maggie Brooks, you said that you wanted to be involved in this, and you later came out, announced the deal, and the deal was phase one, which was free internet for the business district in Greece, downtown, and Pittsburgh Plaza. I would like to know how that has progressed, how many people now have access to internet in the city to help close that digital divide. And could you please provide some specific numbers?
Gosh, I off the top of my head, I really couldn't give you specific numbers. I will tell you, we continue to work on expanding access to free internet. And probably it's not going as quickly as all of us would like, but I still think there's a commitment here. I haven't talked to the new mayor about it, but I would believe that there's still a commitment to do what we can in expanding that so that it's made available to more people. But I don't, off the top of my head, have numbers.
All right, I think I've got Stacy on line one. Stacy, is that you?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hi, I have a question for Maggie. You've been in public service in our community for quite some time now. What would you say some of your greatest accomplishments would be?
Wow, that was a polite way of saying I'm old, isn't it? But was your question saying you're old, Maggie? You know what? I think at the end of the day, people will define legacies in a different way. I am very, very proud of the fact that we never compromised quality of life here in the community, that, you know, we were just talking about the tax rate. We've never compromised our commitment to taxpayers. I ran on that. I still believe it's critical that we protect taxpayers as much as we can. I'm very, very proud of our commitment to jobs. If you look at what we've done through our IDA, we have helped, gosh, I think almost 1,300 local companies, and that's translated into a lot of jobs saved and a lot of jobs created. So to me, those are the two things. And one thing we don't talk about a lot, but I do think it's important to me personally, is that we have been partners in a lot of initiatives that help children and families in our community. Whether you're talking about our support of things like Hillside Work Scholarship Connection and Compass, Nurse Family Partnership, our subsidized daycare program. You know, there's never enough money to put in that program, but we've really worked hard to help children and families in this community, and I'm very proud of that.
All right, I'm trying to get control of my board because it's lots of blinking lights. I think I have Mike in Rochester. Mike, go ahead. Is that Mike?
Yes, this is Dean here.
Dean.
Yes.
Hi, Dean. Go ahead, Dean.
Yes, I'm calling about Maggie Brooks, right, today?
Go ahead.
And my concern is breaks for billionaires. It seems like every big corporation needs to be courted, and those are the rich folks. And I think Wilmerite in Monroe County, with all the malls, is the richest family, and I think they could get the most breaks. And I'd like Maggie to address that, why that doesn't seem fair for one store to get a break and another store to be closed on because a big billionaire moved into town.
Let me reframe that for you, Maggie, because I understand what he's asking. He's saying, why should government pick winners and losers when it comes to handing out tax breaks?
No, I don't think we should. And I think that's why we as a local community, as a municipal government, which is what the county is, we follow the guidelines that are set forth by the state. They're very specific guidelines. We can't, you know, and I'll go back to what I said a few minutes ago. A lot of it is based on investment, cost-benefit ratio, job creation. And for the caller, I don't know if he realizes that a few years ago, retail was taken out of the IDA
That's
benefit
right.
Arena because people were concerned about small stores or whatever, or big stores moving from one part of the community to another and getting a benefit for that. So, yes, you do see the developer receiving incentives, but not the store per se. You know what? You can argue that it's worked and it hasn't worked. Incentives have produced some of our best companies. They've produced stores like Field & Stream, Costco, You know, these, again, are things that contribute to our quality of life. And if we want to achieve a good quality of life here, we have to take some risks sometimes, and we have to do things that not everybody agrees with.
Callers on the line, I apologize if I'm punching the wrong buttons today. I'm still relatively new. I think this is Don. Don, hello. Welcome to Connections.
Good afternoon. I would like to ask the county executive whether we're going to see an abatement of the hostility toward the LGBT community. I can give you three examples of the...
You got to make it quick, Don. We're a little short on time. Go ahead.
I'll make it quick. Three examples. One, several years ago when a same-sex couple had gotten married in another jurisdiction, you refused to recognize their marriage. Secondly, this past July, when the community asked you to fly the rainbow flag over the county legislature building, you refused. Thirdly, when the Democratic caucus flew a rainbow flag from their caucus window, you sent a county sheriff up there to try and tell them that they couldn't do that, and they, of course,
All right, Don, hold on. We got to give her time to respond.
So the easy one first. The last one is completely untrue. I did not send a sheriff's deputy up there at all. The reality is the windows in the county office building, most of them can't open. They're so old. And the sheriff's deputy happened to see the window and went up there because he was concerned. So I didn't send him up there. In terms of the flag, we made it very clear that we only fly flags of nations on the county office building. What doesn't get reported is that we offered an alternate location, and we were turned down. So we did try and work with members of the community. And I'm not sure what the third situation is.
You mentioned a couple that not getting recognized.
Yeah, you know, I think that was a couple at MCC, and they ultimately received benefits from MCC. I'm just not familiar with that.
All right, we've got about a minute left here, and your term limited out. What do we expect from Maggie Brooks post-2015?
Well, you know, I'm going to, regroup a little bit. Timing is everything in this crazy world. Sometimes you don't know what you're going to do until you walk into it or something, or an opportunity presents itself.
Could you run for Congress again?
I don't ever rule that out. I really don't. I would have to look at all the factors at the time. Timing is everything. It's very hard to run in a presidential year, especially against an incumbent. So, you know, I would consider it. I wouldn't say that it's on my bucket list. But you know what? I'm going to be 59. I'll be 60 at the end of next year, and I've still got some few good years left. So I'm hoping an opportunity will present itself.
For the record, I didn't ask that question or that number. So that was a volunteered statement.
I offered that.
Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
County Executive Maggie Brooks with us for the Hour on Connections. Thank you for listening. And if we couldn't get to you today, sorry about that. But join us tomorrow. We're right back here on Thursday.